Hello and welcome to the CDW Radio Podcast. This is the podcast for October 11th, 2006. And I am joined today by the entire edit staff of Computer Gaming World Magazine, which we still are for a couple more weeks, I think. And that staff of editors includes
Ryan Scott,
Darren Gladstone,
Sean Wiggy.
Oh my goodness!
Oh my!
A new paradigm has been set with that introduction.
Sean Malloy.
Good to be back here. We skipped a week last week, and we apologize for that. And I also have to say, Darren, are you dying over there?
Still recovering.
Still recovering. We appreciate all of the hate mail that we got people telling us we weren't there last week. And it means a lot to us that you actually notice that we're not there. So we are committed now to doing this weekly. Right, guys?
We always are. Someone has to leave either the country or the city or whatever for business purposes vacation, and then it just kind of throws a wrench in the
works. It's part of the problem. We can't get the five of us in the same room on a weekly basis.
Well, it really happens, not CDW Radio
if one of us is gone.
Darren or Sean will be gone, and it's like, you know, you don't really want to listen to me talk.
Good point.
Oh, you've done it.
I don't have anything
to
say. No,
I think he's right.
It's just less beatboxing.
Dude, I so want a funky bass line next time.
I know. That kind of messed me up.
I was just trying to set it up so we bring it in with a little hype.
Yeah.
We got it.
Someday we'll have a theme song, too, I think. Eventually. All right, but let's get this moving, shall we? We have a lot to talk about. We've all been playing many new things. I think neither Sean or I have played WoW for a little while now, which is kind of amazing. So we have other games to talk about, all of us. A couple of big things happened. PC Gaming had an outstanding week on national TV this week, so we'll talk about that a little. We have usual news bits. We're going to try to get at least one reader letter in, but why don't we start with the usual and find out what we've all been playing, and hopefully it's some new stuff, and new stuff on the PC would be good.
It's a start.
Ryan, I'm looking at you.
Are you staring at me?
what the hell are you playing, boy?
I've been playing the new Sam & Max game.
Ah,
me too.
I think we've all been waiting for a while.
It's kind of funny, like, as soon as they gave us the codes for that, like, I think, like, every one of the editors is like, okay, is there a code so we can play it too?
Yeah, it's a cool game. I don't know really how much I should say about it since it's not out until next week.
Okay.
But for everybody who's been waiting, you know, 13 years or whatever for a new Sam & Max game, you're going to love it.
Because it feels like Sam & Max to you?
It totally feels like a good kind of classic-style adventure game. Some people on the forums have been complaining about the characters' voices.
You know what? I was about to ask if you would check this out as well, because there's a little war. I'm an audio snob, and there's a bit of a warble with, like, anytime you listen to, like, they have any word with an S in it, it sounds like it's kind of getting, I don't know, just messed up a little.
But you're talking about actually, like, the voices themselves,
the voices
in terms
of Sam,
the characterizations.
Well, it's the same guy, right?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, they're the two guys who voiced them for the original game. I know the dude who did Sam's voice was Bill Farmer, the guy who does, like, Goofy and a bunch of other Disney characters. And these guys, I guess the rationale that Telltale gave us for why they weren't using those guys is because they couldn't commit to, like, a monthly schedule, just because they're, like, career voice actors. Mm-hmm. So they have some very good sound alikes. And some people on the forum are kind of angry at it, but I didn't have a problem with them.
If you don't know the old ones, though, obviously that's not going to matter at all.
Right, right.
How are the puzzles in the game?
It's all good kind of Sam & Max logic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems pretty consistent. I mean, it's not like you're going to... I mean, you have to think like that weird logic, but it's on par with how it used to be.
Mm-hmm. And it's nothing that's going to get you stuck for too long. Mm-hmm. They're all fun puzzles.
And the new one, the next episode is... Oh, well, the first one isn't even out yet. Right,
this is the first episode. Right. Yeah,
okay. Next one next month.
So who are these people talking on the forums if the game isn't out yet? How are people bitching on forums?
Are they basing
already?
Well,
they're going off of the voices from the trailers.
Oh, okay.
It's the same voices that are in the game.
Okay. But that's got to be great. Your game isn't even out yet, and you already have people on the forums.
That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Sheesh.
That's a good set.
Can't freaking please anybody.
Thanks, Ingrates.
But it, like, all the humor and all the other stuff that, that people are hoping they get right, they, I think they got it right.
And but tell people about how long episode one took you to play.
Well, if you're like me and you take the time to explore every nook and cranny and every dialogue choice, takes about between 3 and 4 hours, which, you know, I mean, we expected that. It's episodic.
Right, it's episodic.
You know.
And the price structure on that is what? How much is that going to cost?
You know, I know it's available on GameTap, and I think GameTap's like $10 a month.
Right.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be available on Telltale's site as well. I'm,
uh-huh.
I actually don't know what the price is, though.
On a somewhat tangential note, not that I'm pimping for GameTap, but I did notice that... but I did notice, actually... excuse me, let me just put this 20 away. All right. They're actually just—I just got a press release. They're rerunning all the original Cinemax cartoons from the Fox Network on GameTap as well.
Right, they just announced that yesterday.
Right, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is cool.
I barely remember seeing those shows. I think they're just kind of like a blip.
They were on for a season. That I believe they won some sort of best new cartoon awards, and were taken off the air for what I think are political reasons of some sort.
Wait, yeah. Fox takes shows off the air, prematurely?
Huh.
Such I love that show.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, now it'll be back up on GameTap, so that's kind of cool.
That's cool. You playing anything else, Ryan, or is that about it these days?
That's the big one.
So that was a 3-hour game, and you've played nothing else in 2 weeks.
Well, I also played a fan remake of King's Quest 3.
Oh, yeah.
Which we're actually reviewing for the first issue of Games for Windows.
I'm excited about that precedent we took, if I may toot our own horn for the moment. We reviewed officially a fan-made remake of a game. So I think...
That's a totally free game.
Except, did we like it?
Mm-hmm.
Did we like it?
Yeah, it was...
Oh, got a good review. Okay.
I mean, it's a remake of a 20-year-old game that, mm-hmm. you know, by today's standards isn't terribly complex, but I mean, if you remember that game and you liked it, mm-hmm. and you like, you know, the old Sierra games, this is a really, really good remake.
So when you say remake, is it a true, like, just like line for line text remake of like the entire game, or is it just
the dialogue is mostly the same?
Is it free?
It is, yeah.
Wow, that's great.
It's made by a group of programmers that call themselves Infamous Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
It's their website's www.infamous-adventures.com.
And they haven't gotten any heat from Sierra about this, or?
From what I understand, Sierra has kind of like blessed these remakes. They've said like, okay, mm-hmm. you guys can do these. I mean, as long as they're not selling them for profit or whatever, it's probably
that's amazing. What a labor of love that is.
I mean,
they're getting no money for this at all. I mean, who has the time to do something like that?
Yeah, they look really good. They're like classic Sierra games.
Well, that's great. I mean, actually, I'm kind of curious. Have you checked out The Silver Lining? It's another. It's inspired by all the King's Quest games, and they.
I was looking at the website the other night, but I didn't actually download it.
I actually just downloaded it. We should probably check it out for next week.
I mean, is it just a beta? Is it the full game?
Or? Well, the way I think they're breaking it out into like a trilogy almost. So it's like 3 episodes or something. And since, you know, they've been kind of slaving away on this thing for a while.
Right.
They decided to release the first segment. So it's supposed to take place after the last King's Quest game.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Darren, how about yourself?
All right. Well, I also have been playing Cinemax, mm-hmm. and I'm loving it. Let me see. There was something else. I got my hands on a preview build of Gothic 3.
Oh, so nice.
I'm pretty psyched for that. Although, on the machine I have at my desk at work, it's kind of dog slow, and I'm having some bug issues. Sean, did you ever get yours figured out?
No, I wasn't able to install it. But that's pretty... That's pretty frightening if you're calling the machine that you have at work insufficient for this thing. I think it's probably 3 times the machine that most of our listeners...
That's probably true. I mean, like, uh-huh. Grant, yeah, you should see the machine I have at home. I built this like Frankenstein monster of like all the high-end like bleeding-edge stuff. And at home, it looks great.
This actually worries me about all these upcoming games.
I don't know, though. I was warning Darren that
online... I was turning up the settings all the way.
There's been a big stink in certain places, something awful for him. It's about European reviewers who are given... Because the game's coming out being released in the EU before it is here.
Okay.
And the initial review code that they were giving, what was labeled review code, was very buggy and had a lot of problems. And it caused all this concern. And then a week later, though, they reissued the review code, and it they came back with completely, you know, positive things to say about it. Mm-hmm. That, oh, okay, now it's this isn't an issue now. They fix it. So I was wondering, Darren, which one you got.
Well, I mean, it was obviously a preview build. I mean, there's some stuff that needs to work out. I mean, and I hadn't had a chance to get too deep into the game because it's a huge world to explore. Mm-hmm. But it's the interactions with the world in the initial areas are just, it's pretty cool. It's like the next logical evolutionary step of, like, if you play Gothic 2, where it's this huge open world that exists whether you're doing something or not. And, like, there's things in the environment, like you'll have hunters hunting deer, and, you know, it'll be different every time.
So ecological AI
I haven't had a chance to really explore how deep into it goes, but I mean, yeah, there's obviously the quest structure and, you know, following the course, but it's pretty cool.
Pretty interesting to see how that turns out, because that's something that's so high and ambitious, but, like, how much does it really matter to your experience?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
if a tree is falling in a forest and you're not there to hear it, who gives a crap?
Well, I think the idea is to kind of convey that, like, a world that exists without you, sort of, like, you know, kind of in a way, like, massively single player, you know, like what Oblivion tried to
do. Right.
Mm-hmm. Kind of convey that MMO feel without actually talking to other people.
Well, this game is supposed to kind of be the Oblivion killer, right?
We'll see about that. I mean, and as far as, like, you're saying,
I mean, no one's positioning it that other than than diehard Gothic 2 fans,
right?
And it might very well be the case.
But I don't think that it's
Aspyr's coming out and saying, "Hey, like, you know."
Well, I mean, those guys are thrilled that Oblivion just, like, kind of set the precedent,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah, it kind of, like, put it more to the forefront. That's for sure.
What's one of those? Every Oblivion buyer is a potential Gothic buyer,
right? Yeah, and you know, actually, the combat
is probably not competing at this point.
The combat's pretty cool in this. I mean, like, the few observations I do have so far is that when I was able to get it up and running, it's actually pretty cool. I mean, it's, you know, you could do, you know, you play in first person, a la Oblivion, or pull out to the third person. There are obviously little exploits I've found in the world already. Like, I go boar hunting or something, and you can get them caught on the foliage and just start pecking away with an arrow or something.
Are they clipping through the geometry of the trees, or did you set a trap or something, though?
It wasn't even a trap. I was just, like, I was getting chased by a pack of wild boars, and, like, I kind of ran over some stuff and jumped through a corner, and they couldn't figure out to get back up and come around.
Poor pathfinding as a feature.
Yeah, that's not a bug.
That's a feature. Yeah, so obviously it's not final. But then again, you were saying how they were releasing as review code in Europe, and they do that a lot. I mean, like, maybe it's because the reviewers there are a lot more lenient with their reviewing. I mean, Call of Juarez came out a month ago.
But it is. It did come out. I mean, it's out there.
I know that. That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's out there. And here, like, Aspyr is intentionally holding it back to do bug checking and, like, tweaking on it.
I suspect, I don't know, for Call of Juarez here, I suspect it's more of a market and timing thing.
Well, I think they actually said they want to do some more tweaking with the, like, really? Actually, like, change the voice acting and stuff like that. But, I mean, cool. it seems to happen a lot, though.
Right.
And what else there, Darren?
Just a quickie. I know we can't go on too far today, but a game that actually I was kind of surprised by that I don't totally hate. It's a very Max Payne-ish, but El Matador.
El Matador.
It's just the Matador.
That'll make a good box score. Mm-hmm. This is a
totally
game I don't
it.
Totally hate. Darren Gladstone.
They'll put a sticker on it.
Yeah. Cover up the other sticker on the cover right
now. Yeah, we don't have enough stickers on our boxes. On game boxes. We got to work on that. We got to work on our sound bites.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to hone our skills on these podcasts to come up with, like, a better...
Right. So you might want to hone it better than a game I don't totally hate.
I'll come up with one right now.
Dump on the box.
Who's the developer for Matador?
I don't know. Senega? No. It's a publisher. I don't know.
Okay. We'll just put the usual. Let the frame rate quicken and the visual slicken. Put that on.
I'm bullish for Matador.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Wow. Thanks.
Wow.
So it's basically a Max Payne-ish type.
It's Max Payne. You're a DEA agent and... South America and intrigue. It's just kind of like you're running around shooting things. You can hold, like, the unrealistic, you can hold 20 billion weapons at the same time. Like, it's basically check your brain at the door and just shoot stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all right.
That's the second.
The trick is if it's actually priced okay. I mean, if it's like a $20 game, I could say, you know, it's worth checking out.
That'll be the second game in the past few months set in Latin America.
I was just thinking that. Latin America
is it the new Nazi Germany. Turn in the sun, or, I mean, is it just a coincidence in the same way that, like, You've got Armageddon comes out at the same time as
Deep
whatever,
Impact.
Deep Impact.
And, yeah.
And all that.
Ants and the Bug's Life.
Yeah, ants. Sharks and little Finding Nemo.
So kind of, right. So kind of like the zeitgeist of the era. Yeah. Era.
Everyone's thinking about bugs or right. South America.
What, Just Cause was the other one?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's another one of those games that was just like, it doesn't totally suck, but at the same point, there's so many flaws that keep it from being great.
Once
so we
again,
got, doesn't totally suck as a sticker and could be worth $20.
I think this is why we don't show up on Game Boxes. Yeah. Sean, I know what you're playing, but tell us anyway.
More and more Company Heroes, mm-hmm. but I can make this different because I've been playing multiplayer thoroughly, extensively. And one thing I wish we would all play the same game for once, because I want to be able to come in and talk about specific games we played, stuff that happened in them,
if it wasn't
in a specific game.
We're islands among men. We don't play games together.
Yeah.
Can I be Switzerland?
Or even playing it at home. Everyone here was like, oh, this Company Heroes is hot, you know? And it's like, I want to come in the office in the morning and hear some stories about something messed up that happened or something.
Sean and I always have wow stories for each other.
You do, I know. That's how it works. But so... I've been playing Company Heroes multiplayer, more and more games, different accounts, and just sort of since I'm relatively new to RTS, I'm just kind of digging aspects of multiplayer gaming in that genre that I wasn't accustomed to.
Is this really the first RTS that you've gotten like this into?
It is since like Warcraft 2.
Okay, wow.
So it's been a long time, and it's to the point where now I'm excited about, like, Medieval 2 and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that are interesting already now is everyone's smurfing, which is basically making a new account with a different name, so you basically have a clean stat record. Because what happens is, you know, you have a good stat, and I had a pretty good... I have a good... On my main, I have a nice ratio. It's, like, 40 to, like, 40 wins to, like, 6 losses or something. But what happens is people come in, see that, and immediately leave your game. And mm-hmm. the big problem, unlike, you know, an FPS where you jump in, you've got a game going... You get these scenarios where you're sitting there waiting for someone to come. You go to the chat channel just begging people, hey, come on, join my game. And a million other people are doing it. They all sound like, you know, carnival barkers and stuff in there. And then the other people in the chat channel are arguing about, like, what we should do about Iran, what we should do about this, whether if the Koenig's Tiger, the King Tiger was the best tank ever made, whether their stupid strategy is completely, like, you know, foolproof. And they're always arguing about this and that. And you're like,
hey, is there any hot chat
just
going on?
Shut up and get in this game and play. Come show me how cool you are. And then so you finally get that going. And then you make a game called like Noob's Realm or something, right?
Yeah.
And you start playing. And it's clear within the first few seconds that everyone in there who had basically a clean stat record and was calling themselves a noob comes in saying, like, yeah, I just got this game from Best Buy right now. I'm ready for my first game. And I ain't playing Axis because I've never tried it. And then you go and play. And it's like, I said, 2 seconds in, they're doing this stuff that only a veteran would be pulling off on you. And you're like, hey, you lying sacks of shit. You're not new.
But
then they turn it around on you.
But then again, aren't you the same guy, right?
That's the oldest tactic in the world. If you want to be guaranteed to play with like four veterans, you start a game called Noobs
this
Only.
This is the oldest tactic in the book, but I'm the newest like player in the RTS fold, so it's still exciting and fun to me to learn the ropes of all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Every RTS.
It is. Man, even Ticket to Ride, that, you know, pretty casual strategy board game that we were
got that kind of stuff going on.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And this is a game that's, you know, that like 60-year-old, you know, housewives are playing.
Right.
You know, but even they have that tactic.
So the 60-year-old housewives are hustling each other?
Yeah, they're doing, Noobs Only. And then it's like four people who have like 1,000 games to their credit, you know, but they created a new account.
Sadly, you will run into a legitimate noob. And when you do, you feel you feel so bad. Well, you don't. You laugh and you destroy them first. As you annihilate them. But then you feel bad. And you can always tell in this game, the way you could tell in this game is because people's behavior will be indicative of habits like acquired in other RTSs that are fundamentally different from Company Heroes in the way they play out. So, you know, we start playing these guys and like I throw a surveillance plane over the base. I'm like, what the hell are these guys doing? Like they're supposed to be capturing victory points. And meanwhile, they've got 5 bunkers up and they're in the process of putting MGs on them. Just profligate waste of resources for no good whatsoever, because our main goal in this case is not to go, you know, annihilate and rape their base. It's to get these victory points first. And, so you see that and you're like, okay, well, must be an age player. And then you see the other thing and you're like, okay, that guy must be Rise of Nations player and so on and so forth. And, but it's cool because you can tell, I mean, it just sort of shores it up that this is an RTS that's unlike the other ones, at least in excluding, you know, what Ryan is about to say, Warhammer 40,000, also by Relic, mm-hmm. and what you're playing now, Dark Crusade.
Right.
If you want to go into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, my whole problem with playing online is really what you're talking about. You know, I used to play RTSs online all the time, and now it's just like dudes scamming each other
all the time,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I would play with you guys because, like, I would play with people I know because there's a reasonable chance we might actually have a good game.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to play with, like, you know, three guys who are just like laughing into their team speak
right.
while they screw me.
Which is pretty much what I've been up to. I mean, I've been on the receiving end, and a lot of times I've learned the techniques for screwing other people by being screwed myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like one technique that we started using the other day is basically allied rushes hard. You save all of your resources in a victory point mode. Instead of, I mean, you go and cap the resource bases that you need, but you don't sweat making engineers and, I mean, snipers and MG guns and stuff to fortify what victory points you get. Instead, you save it, get a half track out, have it so that you can immediately send it to the enemy's, like, HQ, and you and your teammates are both doing this. And by the time it gets there, it's upgraded to the quad gun. Mm-hmm. At that point, it'll just start mowing down anything that they've got building. And then if you're airborne, as soon as it mows down a few guys, you're leveled up enough to drop paratroopers. Ooh. And then it just goes from there, and you can end the game in a few seconds. And then there's the other thing, and I might as well say this. At first, I thought, I'm not going to tell people about this because it's too much fun to do and make people just, like, throw their arms up and fit and start screaming. Ooh. But it's going to be fixed. They have to patch this. But basically, on the Axis side, if you get your Grenadiers and you go the Terror Doctrine, and you basically rely on the Zeal power and Inspired Assault, and you get what happens is you get your Grenadier, you equip them with Panzerfaust or Panzer Shreks, and you get them down to one guy by throwing grenades at your own guys. And because Zeal makes a squad more powerful, the fewer people are in it. Basically, it's just sort of like, you know, you're all my homies died, so I'm going to go aggro now. So you do that to yourself, and you let him sit in the back, and then you put him in a half track. You run that to the enemy's back base, and you let him out, or as many of these guys as you can make. They have to be in their own squads, though. You let him out and hit Inspired Assault. And what he starts doing is firing his rocket at every, you know, main bunker and headquarters with, like, the speed of, like, a rocket launcher in an Unreal or a Quake or something, as opposed to the, like, god-awfully slow reload time of a real-life Panzerschreck or Panzerfaust, and will destroy everything in their backfield in like, 30 seconds. And we're going to put – actually, we made some videos of this, and we'll put them up on our forums today. So if you listen to this and you want to go to CGW Forums, you can check out a video of this awesome
fact. It's glad to know that you're playing the game in the spirit of you know, World War II realism. First, let's throw grenades at our own guys.
Right. That's the thing is everyone in the damn channel is having these like pseudo like armchair general, you know, macho nerd arguments about what's the best piece of armor in this game and stuff. But the whole thing is it's so gamey. It's like a sniper can be like 10 feet from someone and they don't see him.
Yeah,
and we're talking about open ground. He's just sitting like in a field with no grass or anything, you know. And it operates like a game. It's still easy to get into the mood and feel, hey, this is World War II. But come on, man, you don't start bringing like real world like armor stats and this and that to it. It's very much a game.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Malloy,
well, I haven't been playing WoW. Which
excellent.
Is giving me withdrawal pains.
Uh-huh. You get like DTs okay. as you're like,
kind of
play.
Shaking over there.
Yeah. A little bit. But I have been playing some Mage Knight Apocalypse.
Ah, Apocalypse. That's right.
So
and?
Eh.
Once again, that's another so box quote.
Eh.
Sean Malloy.
It's pretty mediocre. It's
that's too bad because it looked good back when we were.
It did.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's easy to call it a Diablo clone because it's got like, you know, five characters that you pick from. And then each character has the three different talent trees. So it kind of has that same structure.
Then you click on stuff till they die.
And you click on stuff. It's like a little more complicated than just spamming a fireball spell or whatever because I found myself doing a lot more like crowd control-y stuff, you know, mm-hmm. making sure to fear people and root people. And I don't know if that's just my life.
Did you play Titan Quest?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
It does feel a little bit more, it feels like a hybrid of like a WoW-ish and then like an action game as well. I mean, the one
you can tell that they wanted to kind of tap into WoW because like the NPCs have the same exact giant exclamation point over their head if they're doling out quests.
I guess that's just becoming like a gaming convention though now.
Right. I mean, there's the equivalent of that in Guild Wars, right?
Right.
And
I do it. It's the same thing. It's an exclamation point.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Big golden exclamation
it's
point.
It's pretty much
Vanguard
standard.
Is actually not using that.
I don't think people don't play WoW for the exclamation.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, when you see that, you're
these
just like,
these rotten thieves stole our fucking grammar.
There's like
punctuation thieves.
The biggest problems with it are like the allied AI, like any NPCs you pick up to help you out, like they're just so stupid.
Yeah.
Like they'll just stand there as you go forward, and like I was playing this necromancer, so I could animate any dead body,
okay.
And like it'll be my little friend. And, like, but most of the time, like half the time, if you animate like the werewolf you just killed, they'll just kind of hang out and not do anything
and
like,
not attack.
Don't get him, but
yeah, and you can't control him directly. You have click on him and send
you have
him.
Three little mini commands to attack, follow, and stay. And
so it's kind of the same sort of stuff as in WoW.
Sometimes they want to attack if you tell them to.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
You know, there was
if you're going to kill something and bring it back to life to do your bidding for you, it better do your bidding.
Yeah. I mean,
you know?
I'm supposed to be controlling.
That's what I'm saying.
That's like a unique frustration of these type of games is just yelling at unit. Why don't you freaking do this? Like,
yeah.
They sit there. You get so mad, just blow a gasket.
So it's kind of like a bad WoW group in a way.
Awesome. We're just full of great box quotes today.
Yeah. The other thing, another fundamental problem, I tried playing Mage Knight as well, and I guess one thing that kind of annoyed me was it kind of masquerades as an action game because you can use WASD controls to move your character. And it's a convention of I hate this in every MMO when someone throws a fireball or something throws a fireball at you, and then you run out of a building, or you know you want to dodge that. You don't want to sit there and wait for the thing to hit you square in the grill. So, and then somehow that magically follows you around the corner and hits you anyhow.
Right.
Yeah. This is something.
And it does that in this game a lot.
It's like a single player game, or even like a not massively multiplayer game like this. Like, there's certain things that massively multiplayer online role-playing games do because of, like, network latency issues. So, like, you can't dodge out of the fireball's way, and they do it that way where it's, like, an auto-attack. Like, it automatically follows you wherever just because, like, the logistics of networks right now just don't let it happen.
And that's completely fair.
Right, but, I mean, like, when you're doing the single-player game, like, you should...
There's really no excuse.
You should be able to dodge.
Yeah. A lot of this legacy MMO gameplay...
Right, because in real life, when fireballs are coming at us... We don't have latency issues.
Right. Well, I
can dodge out of the way of a fireball.
Like, right. You know,
just case.
Like,
you just your wife just rolls over in bed and avoids it.
Ouch.
Hello.
Wow.
Oof.
Holy mackerel.
I was talking about the Dutch oven, man.
Oh, okay.
Lest there be some confusion.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp, womp.
So I've been playing Dawn of War Dark Crusade, which is kind of amazing. I mean, so Relic put out both these games in 2006. The Company of Heroes, clearly an awesome game, probably in our shortlist for Game of the Year so far, I would say.
Definitely on that shortlist.
And but now they also put out this expansion to Dawn of War, the second one. And it's sort of like the first one, Winter Assault, in that it's like, you know, huge and generous and, you know, pretty great of them to do, I think, you know, because they're not just throwing, like, you do get each existing race gets a couple more units, kind of the typical thing. There's more maps, but they added a whole new mega game, like a Risk style meta game of conquering the planet, and they added two new whole races. And you don't need the original to play it. So
I hope that tendency to expand on things that frequently carries over to Company Heroes.
I
mean, it's a good thing.
Well, I think Relic's been always pretty consistent about that.
They are on an amazing roll right now. I mean, the only bad thing about Dark Crusade, I would say, is just in comparison to Company of Heroes now, it feels kind of like Company of Heroes 0.5.
You know,
Company of Heroes is such a refined and expanded version of what Dawn of War was.
Right.
It's a little hard to go back.
And it's also in terms of the appearance and stuff, too. I mean, like, looking over your shoulder when you were playing this game, it looks good, but it looks like... It has almost the exact same interface as Company of Heroes.
Pretty much.
You look at the whole setup on it, but then you look at the stuff on screen, and it's just lacking, like, you know, some of the normal mapping and the physics.
There's no physics, really, at all, to speak of.
Explosions and stuff, yeah.
But still a lot of fun. And I'm also on the Vanguard beta now. I went down to see it last week at Sony for this big press event, and they gave us all beta accounts. And, you know, it's pretty good so far. I think, actually... Am I off NDA now? Am I allowed to say anything? I think so.
Let me see.
What's like, today? Is today
today's
Wednesday?
Today's the 11th, so NDA lifted yesterday, so...
Awesome.
There you go.
Yeah. So they're in an interesting position. If you don't know this game, this is the two guys who made EverQuest originally, EverQuest 1. It's Brad McQuaid and Jeff Butler were the two original developers and designers of EverQuest. And this game, Vanguard, has been in development for, oh my God, 5 years now, I think, is when we first started seeing it. And it was originally a Microsoft in a Microsoft first-party game, and now it is being published by Sony. So they're kind of back home. The prodigal sons have returned to Sony Online with you know, a next-gen MMO. And they're, you know, they're currently dealing with the fact that they've got the 8,000-pound gorilla in the room now. I mean, they essentially...
And just even, like, a name like Vanguard or something. Like, what is it? Like, what does it conjure? Like, I mean, maybe it's not the case, but, I mean, just what comes to mind when I hear that is, like, a box with a dude holding a sword on it.
Totally high fantasy. And
like,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you're getting.
It is.
That's what you're getting. But it's not like these aren't dumb guys. They're very smart game designers, and they have a good awareness of their place in the universe and the fact that WoW exists. So watching them develop this game now is pretty interesting because they're trying to take those lessons from WoW, of the things that WoW did right, and they're also trying to make it they're trying to gear it towards a more hardcore player, but they're also trying to send the message out that, like, don't be scared of it. If, you know, they're worried now that original message, like, this is a more hardcore MMO, is going to frighten off the...
Are they worried about that, or are the PR people worried about that?
No, they're worried about it, too. You know, they are. They're worried that this perception has kind of gotten out of hand.
Because I've seen those kind of weird flip-flops, like, say, with the Splinter Cell that's coming out, that's on the way. They've sort of done that. It's like, at one point, they're talking about how they've made it far more accessible, and then they start get worried and... You know, you see memos about how, no, it's deeper than ever. And it's like, well, you got to make up your mind. I mean,
yeah,
right.
Going for the Barnum principle on that.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I'm still looking forward to that either way. I don't care what.
Oh, yeah, totally. Complete. I'm just referencing it in terms of, like, just that whole, like, who is it? I mean, it's always a cake and eat it too thing from PR.
It is a cake and eat it too thing. Well, what's interesting is that, you know, the later game, higher game stuff that they've shown and that I saw last week looks really great. I mean, they have great ideas. One thing about coming after WoW is you can take what WoW did right and wrong and, of course, learn from that. Mm-hmm. So, like, one thing they've done, WoW in Burning Crusade, the upcoming expansion, you're going to be able to have flying mounts. And so you can fly around on your mount in the new areas, because in the existing World of Warcraft world, it would break the game if you were able to fly around. So Vanguard learned from that. So the entire world is being built so that you could fly around in it. So they can create, like, whole continents, like, way up in the air that you can see when you're a lowbie or a newbie, but you won't be able to get to until you're, like, 40 levels higher. So stuff like that is just kind of neat game world stuff.
Did you play the game at all?
I did, yeah.
Did you – now, so aside from talking about, you know, like, the quality of the ideas and this and that, your gut reaction, or rather the hairs on the back of your neck, did they tell you it's likely that I'm going to – like, A, this will become my replacement for World of Warcraft. B, this is cool enough that I'm going to, like, sit down with it when it comes out. I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to see if it can become either a complement or a replacement for World of Warcraft. Or C, like, there's some cool ideas here, but who really knows? I mean, like, what is your instinct telling you?
That's a good question. And really, I what happened was they let us play it all day long on last Friday down there. So I got my initial character, who was a gnome sorcerer, up to level 8 or so.
You like those gnomes?
You're just going to be playing gnomes for us.
I like gnomes. Yeah, that's some, I don't know, I'll talk to my therapist or something going on.
You start naming all your characters the fetishist.
And my experience, and I talked to the developers about it after I played all day, my initial gut reaction was, well, that higher game stuff that they're talking about is really neat. I do want to have a flying mount. I would like to have a house where I can do certain things on that would be cool that you can't do in WoW. Mm. But
it's that minute-to-minute stuff.
But those first 8 levels, they're so painstakingly trying to get that ease of use that WoW has and that friendliness that, you know, I did ask them, like, well, if I bought this game and I don't know about all that higher level stuff, how am I going to not think that this is just a WoW clone? Because honestly, that is how that first those first few levels felt in a way.
When you're going around beating on stuff to level up,
you're basically beating on little spiders, and just like every other.
Let's look
MMO.
At it this way: say if some fool can get an Escalade with like 20s or whatever, but he's got to work at Taco Bell. I mean, that's the sort of scenario we got. You got a fly mount, but what does it matter when like the game in this case is like, working with the seven famous ingredients at Taco Bell,
right? I think it's
the trick is having the game that starts off with giving you make you feel powerful from the beginning to some degree. I guess. I mean, like City of Heroes tried doing that. You started off with a series of powers, and you were just beating up guys, but you were beating up crooks down the street as opposed to like killing a rat.
Mm. Well, it's tough. I mean, you got to capture people within the first whatever half hour, 15 minutes, even. Mm-hmm. And so if your game is about grander ideas and bigger ideas, it's hard to. I think they're in a like tweaking refinement phase, and they're the first ones who will tell you that I think they're working on this early game experience. One thing I know that's different than WoW is that you're going to get your first mount at level 10, mm-hmm. which is very early compared to a game like WoW.
Right.
Where the mount in WoW was like the big thing to aspire to that takes quite a while to get to. You're not to level 40 till you get it. So you'll have a mount in Vanguard, at least the way it's currently designed, at level 10, which you can get in just, a few hours of playing, basically.
It's just like a Shwelin bowback horse or something, though.
Exactly. But that's an innovation that WoW doesn't have. There's going to be levels of mounts, Your mount will be able to wear armor. They're also talking about combat on mounts, which WoW doesn't have either.
When you say combat, it's just like, your usual combat of just like... push the one key to your hot key fight. And then,
well, sure.
Well, that's how it
always
is.
I know.
WoW doesn't have combat on mounts?
No. If you get attacked on your mount,
that's what I'm saying.
You're automatically bumped off your...
Even Ultima Online had combat on mounts.
Always the UO snob.
It was way better back in Ultima Online.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, so I'll keep talking about Vanguard over the coming weeks. I keep playing it.
The problem I was going to have is that, like, in my, like, WoW Guild, for example, or even among my little friend group, like, the level of interest is like, well, I might try it. And then the chance of all the people who might try it in your guild or whatever actually getting hooked, based on what I'm hearing here, like, within the first 10 levels, sounds like it's going to be pretty low. And, like, they'll just go back to WoW. And, the timing is going to be tough because, like, Burning Crusade is still going to be...
You can't quote me on it, but I believe that they're probably going to wait out
Burning Crusade.
Not dumb.
That would be wise, yes.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Actually, I guess you can quote me on it since I said it for public consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're waiting out Burning Crusade.
But I'm really interested in those high-level ideas. I've heard about the diplomacy stuff. I'm like, oh, that's kind of an interesting extra sphere of gameplay that I haven't seen in an MMO. Mm-hmm.
To be an in-game politician as opposed to an in-game golem slayer plus 10.
Yeah, no, these guys, they're smart guys and they have good ideas, but they definitely have their work cut out for them. I think it's like a question that every MMO designer is facing. How do you convince people not to play what has turned out to be one of the best PC games ever made?
It just comes up in the context every time. It's just that mutual exclusivity of playing MMOs. It's not there for other genres, even genres that you invest large amounts of time in, like Battlefield or something. It's like, foreseeably, when Quake Wars is out, it'll be awesome because I could play that for an hour, then I can switch over to Crysis multiplayer for an hour, I could switch to, Dark Messiah multiplayer for an hour, whereas MMOs, it's really like, if you're going through all that slogging and grinding and low-level mounts and whatnot...
And it's also the money.
And monthly fees.
It's the money, right. I mean, it's like a service. It's like having cable TV. Mm-hmm. If you're paying $15 a month for this one game, and you're still into it, are you really going to want to pay another $15 a month? It's like having, Comcast and then adding... another cable service on.
So say ABC came through your Comcast account and then you had to use, AT&T or something to get, NBC and...
Right. At some point, you're just going to make that choice. I'm just going to pay the one.
Right.
It's tough.
That's the problem.
It seems to me like it would be like a similar sort of uphill battle for any MMO, like not just Vanguard.
Right. That's what we're saying. This is the exact same conversation we have.
I mean,
an MMO comes up that's not World of Warcraft.
The people in your guild are like, oh, I'm sort of interested.
Well, Guild Wars was able to circumvent it by no monthly fee, right?
Right. Like,
that's how they got away with it.
Yeah, how many people can do that? You know, like, that's kind of a fluke.
Yeah, it's tough. So speaking of World of Warcraft, though, we mentioned at the top of the podcast, this was a huge week for PC gaming on TV. There was, let's see, we all know, we'll talk about it, South Park, the season premiere. That's the highest rated show on Comedy Central, devoted their whole 10th season premiere to World of Warcraft. And I think we all saw it, right? It was a pretty funny episode. Yep. And then just a few days later, on The Office, on NBC, it wasn't the whole episode, but a significant scene in the episode had the folks in the office playing Call of Duty on the PC. So, you know, I don't like to do too much like the PC rules type stuff, or, you know, the PC's not dead. But that was pretty amazing, I thought. Mm-hmm. You had two pretty high-profile shows on national TV, and both pimping PC games.
And it's good to see someone playing a game on TV that's not controlled through this, like, pseudo Xbox Dreamcast controller hybrid.
Yeah.
And with, you know, as we were talking about earlier, with the audio effects coming from an 8-bit era, you know.
Yeah. Can one of you guys do that imitation?
Waka, 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 waka.
Yeah, you see a car on
like
the screen.
Like a Frogger?
You see someone playing, like, some next-gen driving game on the screen. They're holding a controller that doesn't exist, and then you hear...
Yeah, actually, I remember I was watching. I think it was like I was like CSI or something, and I'm watching the show, and they actually had sound effects from. I was picking. I was like Yar's Revenge from the 2600, and crazy.
Yeah, they're always
stuff.
Holding like Atari era joysticks. Yeah, it's really annoying. So this was actually two real games that really existed. We'll talk about the South Park one, but the Call of Duty one really actually kind of impressed me. I mean, somebody at Activision did some like amazing product placement there. Because they're really playing that game. You see it on the screen.
Yeah, I saw that clip out of context on YouTube, and it didn't.
Well, that's how I saw it.
And it didn't make me laugh. It didn't seem fun. It did seem like total product placement.
It made me laugh. I thought it was funny. You see the guy, you know, who can't get around the wall. The guy is just like wall walking, and then the female coworker just shoots him in the head. How could you not like that? But, yeah, in both cases, like, I don't know the story behind the scenes of either one of these, whether, whose idea it was first. Did Activision go to NBC and say, hey, you should put Call of Duty in your show? Or did the guys who make The Office really love Call of Duty and want to put that scene in there?
Right.
And the same thing goes for WoW and South Park. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know who started it, but in either case, there were huge advertisements for these games.
Right. Well, the thing is, a lot of people, like, where I kind of felt that was the case for The Office one, a lot of people are accusing the South Park episode as being a glorified hour-long advertisement for World of Warcraft and Blizzard. But the thing I was saying is that I see it more as fan service, because if you don't already play that game, sit back and look at that episode and ask yourself, is this a good advertisement for
right.
playing?
Wasn't you've right. got, flattering.
I mean, you've got them when they sink in into the end to take out their nemesis or whatever. I mean, they're just like faces are covered in chankers and boils, and STD sores. And then, I mean, the guy is like to crap. His mom comes down with a bedpan.
Oh, that was so
like,
nasty.
Backblasted
right.
over. You know, his chair. And it's like you look at these guys. Oh, or the guy, the big like evil
oh,
nemesis
the big evil guy. Yeah,
like barely moves. He's got like a wrist guard on, and the only time like he moves other than like a wrist
to fix
like
his
spasm is to fix his
Dorito
glasses
office.
Or to brush Dorito from his shirt.
Yeah, that was a little too close to home for
onto the floor. It's like you're watching this and you're like, hot damn, I got to get up in this game. It's not an advertisement.
You know what the worst part is? Like I started watching the episode with my fiance Amy, and she's watching it, and she's like, she likes watching South Park. And she's kind of getting into it. She actually pauses it and says, "Can you explain this whole thing to me?" And I'm like, you know. And then as you see, like the South Park gang, like start getting like fatter and like really getting into like the game. And she's like, "Oh."
That's what's funny. Yeah, you don't even need to know what they're saying. It's like when in the same way that pretty much anyone can listen to, you know, us play this stuff and laugh or whatever. I mean, they're you know when Cartman is like rallying the troops and it's just like. All right, I need you to put a +4, you know, man and cap on this. It's like, it could just be sheer nonsense. In the same way that, like, I'd never, and this is being truthful, I'd never got into Dungeons & Dragons, but I could go around and mimic and make fun of the people doing it because it becomes, like, it's widely circulated enough as this sort of like, you know, meme or stereotype that you just pick up on, you know, and you know,
on the
throw
other
in
hand,
dye and then throw in a plus something with like some kind of like item of clothing or, yeah, right, or a weapon and you're good to go.
Well, they did, you know, they did, you're right, they don't make like a good case for like, here's something you should really go do because look at these guys.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I thought what was good though was that they don't, it doesn't have that, also didn't have that condescending, you know, total these guys are losing. Like, they clearly, there was a love of the game in there.
Right.
Like, they knew what they were doing.
It was
doing
an end of the world scenario. Right. I mean, it was like
of Warcraft.
it was some serious business.
Yeah, South Park targets are usually pretty, like, lambasted.
Exactly. Like they didn't do, like, a Tom Cruise on Warcraft here. You know, there was clearly a love of the game going on. You know, it wasn't just screw these guys. This is the end of society as we know it. Mm-hmm. In fact, and these guys must play World of Warcraft, right?
Considering all the stuff they threw in there, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, if they wrote that, I think so.
And using the in-game footage, like, for significant portions of the show worked so well, because look at the... It would be difficult in another game, but it made... in another show, it made perfect sense in South Park, because the animation's so, like, crappy on that anyway, that, like, it's not much of a...
Right.
It's not much of a jump between one and the other.
Right. Right.
It's not like going from, you know, Tom Cruise sitting at a computer terminal saying he needs more RAM to hack this computer or something, which is... Well, that's not Tom Cruise. That's a Steven Seagal movie or something. Anyway.
So, like, to some more in-game
footage,
well,
you know, it's just like, okay, well, here's one, you know, like, artful construction, and here's another.
Mm-hmm. Now, I forget, was it like the South Park guys that actually coordinated those in-game scenes, or was that all done like on
that
the Blizzard
side? That
had to
have been on Blizzard's
there
side.
Had to be some Blizzard involvement, because they were, the characters were, the in-game WoW characters were doing movements that WoW currently can't do.
Right.
Right.
So they were tweaking with their own enemies.
All the dialogue was lip-synced and stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, well, that was, yeah.
Right. I thought it was pretty amazing. Just, you know, I think we can sort of take a little bit of, like, pride here that, like, the two games featured were not Xbox 360 games or whatever. You know, so.
What?
Yeah. We're going to do one thing and then we'll take a break.
There's, like,
but, yeah,
the fact that there was some artistic license taken to make the show, like, work well, you know, such as lips that actually move in conjunction with dialogue being spoken, actually pissed off quite a few people. And so I'm going to read a few complaints from people that saw.
Before you read these, can we note the irony?
Okay,
right. These complaints.
So these are, they're hopefully ironic complaints at factual inaccuracies in the portrayal of World of Warcraft in the South Park episode.
You got to read them in character.
Do them in character.
So one person comments that, contrary to the implications in the episode, character death is at best a minor inconvenience in World of Warcraft, overcome with time, effort, and or in-game money. One implication of this is that the boys accomplished nothing, and that the renegade would be back at full strength less than 5 minutes after the end of the frickin' episode. And then another... Ah, known character names Big Bone for Cartman and loves to spooch for Stan would never, ever, ever be allowed. And then find some other random... Okay, here's a good one. Excuse me, but there's no spell that summons four scorpions as a renegade does. Though the renegade is possibly a hacker modder, since he surpassed level limits and is able to fight and kill others even outside of duels. Well, the problem is for that buddy is that how did you even get by the fact that he's just player killing people at random, or that he was supposedly playing the game every single second since it went live? But no, that's not the issue. It's the fact that he's something. What is it? Scorpions.
Four scorpions.
Which, by the way, tells me more than enough about World of Warcraft, and it confirms why I don't play it. You fight more scorpions in that damn game.
There are scorpions.
There are scorpions.
Lord Galen will be proud.
I know. If I say that, I pretty much rip myself out of all RPGs and whatever you'd call the
thing. Though is,
and
you
can play Titan Quest.
They're called scorpions.
They're scorpions.
They're
different.
They're different. So it's not exactly like killing a scorpion.
Right.
Okay. So back off.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You don't understand, man. Jerk. You weren't there.
Okay. So we're gonna take a slight break and be back with more nonsense.
Listen to EGM Live to hear Electronic Gaming Monthly editors take you beyond the pages of the magazine.
Extended impressions of the hottest games.
Shocking celebrity guest stars.
Exterminate all man animals at will!
And the newest video game soundtracks.
That's EGM Live, available at egmlive.oneup.com or the iTunes Music Store.
And we're back. We didn't even really go anywhere, did we?
No.
But we're back.
Don't break the illusion.
Oh, right. So, yeah. So, are we done with the TV stuff? Are we done with Wild
I think we're
South
done
Park?
With that, but it'll be cool to see more of that kind of stuff in the future, as long as it's well
more
done.
More product placement?
Yeah.
Good, well,
yeah,
like I said, I don't, like, the South Park had a good handle on it, and it didn't feel like, I mean, it was ironic enough, and it didn't strike me as being product placement.
I'll tell you what I liked about both those things, though, too, is that it seemed like a very kind of a cultural shift in a way, a little bit. I don't want to make too big a deal out of it, but the fact that like all of these like grown-up office people were playing this game seemed like, okay, we're allowed to actually say now that this is a pastime people do,
right?
That isn't just like 18-year-old potential, you know,
Columbine killers.
I mean, exactly.
It's just like, yeah, going beyond that like illusion that, you know, a perception rather that
right.
the media likes putting out there that we're all just a bunch of dumbasses. Well, we are a bunch of dumbasses, but
mm-hmm. just this, that it's basically a common American and increasingly world pastime that's just comparable to, you know, reading, watching television, mm-hmm. going to movies and stuff. And quick aside on that, Jack Thompson, hate mentioning the guy, he's such a non-entity, a non-news story, but I just, this isn't really about him, but just this like this funny forward in his book that's floating around the office. And actually, it's floating around the office because someone's thinking of doing a story on it. And I'm like, come on, don't give this guy any more airtime. And here I am doing it. But anyway, it said this book is dedicated to so-and-so who was killed in Columbine by a video gamer. And that was, that's pretty much what it said. But it's like, I mean, it's like saying so-and-so who was killed by a television viewer, who was killed mm-hmm. such-and-such by a right. food eater, who was killed by a person who slept.
The labels are very weird. I mean, you know what the one that's actually, it's sort of a tangent, but the one that's bothered me all these years is you cannot read an article about Rodney King, even all these years later, with that, do you know what he's called?
No.
Black Motorist.
What?
Black Motorist,
nice.
Rodney
Thanks.
King. When Black Motorist Rodney King was killed, that goes all the way back to the day it happened. It's like, what is that? What he was? He was a motorist.
That's on his business card.
What is that?
Business card.
Wow, that is so messed up.
I swear, Google Rodney King, and he was Black Motorist okay. Rodney King.
I'll do that. We'll see you after this. But so anyway, yeah, just bringing that all up, just in terms of like getting to the point where it would seem as absurd to use video gamer as a prefix that's supposed to give you any kind of, you know, serious descriptive information
right.
about something than saying that they're a person who reads a newspaper reader such and such, or, you know, like I said, car driver Jeff Green.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's his agenda. Whatever.
Yeah. Wait, no more words for that.
For that clown.
That
yeah.
guy.
So speaking of product placement and advertisement and all that, we have an interesting story from Mr. Gladstone. We all received our copies of Battlefield 2142 yesterday in the mail. The servers aren't up yet, so we haven't played yet, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
Well, I've played, but just not the... Well, we haven't played the retail box
played the retail
copy
box
that came
copy.
In.
But so, the interesting thing about player. The retail box copy, tell us what happened when you opened the retail box of 2142, Darren.
Actually, I'm going to do that right now on the air.
Okay. There he is. He's opening the box.
I actually just opened the box.
Did you hear that sound effect?
Wow.
Something's wrong. We needed to hear you ripping off cellophane and peeling off two varieties
sticker.
Of stickers, top and bottom.
I was actually thinking of rumpling paper to simulate it. Theater of the mind. But anyway, so... As you open up the package, there's this one like white card, a disclaimer card that you stare right at before you like right across from the disc. So it says, I'll just kind of paraphrase here. The software may incorporate technology developed by IGA Worldwide, the advertising technology. The purpose of the advertising technology is to deliver in-game advertisements to when you use the software while connected to the internet. When you use the software while connected to the internet, the advertising technology may record your internet protocol address and other anonymous information. That advertising data is temporarily used by IGA to enable the presentation and measurement of in-game advertisements and other in-game objects, which are uploaded temporarily to your personal computer or game console and changed during online gameplay. The advertising technology does not collect any personally identifiable information about you, and EA will not provide... Okay, so basically they're saying...
Hold on, let me translate. Attention, spyware enclosed.
Yes. The short version is you have adware on your computer that's going to pull personal information, although anonymously.
I wonder if like the usual stuff like the Windows and adware will pick it up when you run a scan.
That's a good question.
I'm going to have to try it because I just installed that version the other day. So
So let's take note of this.
People with the beta can test for themselves as well, which has it running. I mean, you can already see ads for in the purple future of 2142. You can see ads for Dodge Rams and stuff like that. As you're fighting in 2142, you can get yourself a 2006 Dodge.
Way to break the illusion, guys. Yeah.
Well,
no,
okay.
I can imagine cruising around like the Neo Future landscape in my Dodge Neon.
Does that? But let's break this down. I mean, because that doesn't particularly bother me. I don't think. I mean, does it really
in-game advertising?
You know what? The only reason
we've this debate, and it seems like on the average, it's pretty tired. So maybe we shouldn't like completely rework it here. But what it seems to come back to is that a lot of us say we don't mind when it fits the context.
Yes.
So say, for example, if you're in Saints Row, a Mountain Dew billboard is really not going to be that offensive because, sure enough, if you're walking in an American city right now. But in the future, in the frozen Ice Age, Neo-Ice Age future of 2142, in the very much purple future of 2142, that's my character, Nick, too, now for this game. I don't know how long I'll play, but my name is Purple Future. And anyway, it just really pulls you out. It just shows you how completely ridiculous and artificial it is.
I haven't played this game at all, so I haven't seen
it. It's the same as if, like, in WoW, say if you're fighting a Nixie and all of a sudden, like, when you killed an ad for Depends, like, undergarments popped up.
That would bug the shit.
That would
be awesome.
Yeah. Then it's really absurd.
Literally. Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah. But, yeah, it's less the ads themselves than the fact that it's recording my IP.
It's got the Goochware on it, too.
Yeah, I'm not too happy with the IP recording. I'm not pleased with, the pulling you out of the gameplay. I mean, if they actually made some fake ads, like Dodge Silver, I mean, I know it's kind of fake Dodge from the future with a hover car, I could dig that even.
Right. But this technology bothers me, too, because an in-game advertisement in a game like Saints Row or whatever it is, where it's like a one-time thing that's sitting on the disc, obviously they don't have to put a card in your box warning you because it's just an ad that they paid for. But this card is telling me, if they made this card, they're scared enough to know that they've put something in the software or there's something on their server that's going to mess with you in some way or mess with your machine.
Right.
And that's how it feels to me. Anyway.
Right. Well, I mean, clearly
if they have to make this, they're scared of something. And if they're scared, why do it in the first place? To save money on costs for developing the game?
You can see their point of view, what they're able to say to their advertisers is, hey, you know, you come up with a new ad 6 months from now, and we could throw that ad in dynamically into your game. It's a great revenue stream.
The difficult thing is that this game does require post-release maintenance, not anywhere along the lines of an MMO. And I mean, they do run EA runs a number of its own servers. Players also pay for it and run their own, but they also continue to patch it. But this is pretty normal stuff, you know. It's not like they're going, you know, really far out of their way where they say, hey, if this is going to continue, we absolutely have to find some way to generate money for this. It's either charging you a monthly fee to play or it's putting this stuff in. I don't think it's really to that point yet. I think it's like, I mean, this seems like an excellent proving ground for them to test this whole, you know, thing out.
I mean, if this is legitimately helping keep costs down because they are maintaining servers and stuff, I can understand to a degree doing something. The IP logging scares the hell out of me, and I'm not really a fan of that.
I mean, it's of course the EA has been getting your IP for years and years.
Right. Of course they have.
That this company, but
now it's a third party. Is now
that's what I'm talking about.
Right. And you have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
With it.
I know that EA has my IP. I know that Blizzard has my IP.
And
I don't care.
What if it's some Russian company or something? And the facts, this becomes our next big story 6 months from now. And like you're saying, it has been, it's data mining. It's doing all these other sorts of things in addition to the service that it alleges to do through EA.
Right.
So
I don't need Star Force
or something.
It's like, do I trust EA? Yeah. Do I know the first thing about IGA worldwide? No.
Yeah, we don't know anything about these guys.
Other than that, they
might have made the Gizmondo
advertising technology.
It could be those same guys. It's a Swedish mafia again.
Oh, jeez. You're going to drive an Enzo funded by my account.
Very ominous.
So it's a weird precedent. But what you were saying, though, the context, when it bothers me, if I'm playing online or something, a racing game, and I'm zipping by McDonald's billboards, well, whatever.
Okay, fine.
Or a sports game.
Remember, and when Crazy Taxi came out for Dreamcast, it was actually
drive to the KFC.
It actually
drive.
Made people excited because you're like, that's like very similar to, you know, I get to go to Taco Bell. Like, I get to go to KFC or whatever.
I get to drop the chalupa.
Yeah. Let's make a run for the border. But,
I don't like to diss other gaming media on, you know, in public, and I don't really want to do that here, but I do find it a tad interesting that there's some Battlefield 2142 reviews appearing already.
It's not even online.
This game hasn't even gone live yet.
Right. And as we know, a print review, I mean, just for the listeners, when we finish it, it gets put into the magazine, and then we ship the magazine to, you know, we do all these things. It goes to the printer, and there's basically a big lag time, anywhere from between, on the low end, 2 weeks?
That it's finished and the time our November, the November and, CGW, mm-hmm. the last CGW, is not on newsstands for one more week.
And it'll
be on the newsstand. And
we finished it
3 weeks ago?
About three weeks ago.
So there's a big lag time. So basically what it means is that when you're reading print reviews of this now is that they... The game playing that the review is sort of, you know, founded on occurred at least 2 weeks ago, assuming other, you know, publishers have a faster
system. So if you see a print review of Battlefield 2142 in a magazine right now, that means that they reviewed it about at least 2 weeks ago.
Well, what did they review?
Is this the issue that you borrowed from me?
No, it's another one.
Oh, okay.
It's one that's coming out now. But anyway, so the question is, you know, what was reviewed? And in this case, we just received, like I said, the box copies yesterday. However, middle of last week, we did get a downloadable version of what was called review code. However, no, and this has happened in the past. However, no, and basically only very few people have access to it. EA's people, and then some people in the press. And usually in these circumstances and in the past, EA has said, okay, we're going to hold these sessions at these specified times where we'll populate servers with our own testers. And I didn't receive any notice for anything like that this time, and
you were on vacation.
Okay, but in the past, so going back, you know, most recently to the Armored Fury play session, they held them on 3 days, and they're an hour long, and I attended all three for that, and was there both, you know, for hours before and after the session, and in no case was the server ever entirely populated. EA could muster no more than 8 or so players to join in with us, and then the press presence was limited to 4. Which would be CGW, GameSpot, and 2 fan sites. So just judging from experience, I mean, I could be wrong. There definitely could be information we don't have, and you don't want to make too many assumptions, but I'm very curious as to what and how, like, someone could say that they've reviewed it and understand it. Because even playing single player, which, of course, is not indicative of multiplayer experience, you only have access to the 16-player maps in this, which are highly infantry-based. Most of them have no vehicles at all. They definitely don't allow for Titan mode in single player. And it's just... This is just the kind of game that it really needs, before you can comment on any of the key stuff, you know, is it balanced and this and that, and does it work well, you need to play it in a natural environment, you know. So anyway, that's just our little rant on...
Yeah, no, I not trying to throw stones here. It just really kind of... I just don't even know what...
It's just interesting,
What they're reviewing.
Right.
I mean, you can't get on now.
It's probably like 8 people populating a 32-player map. I mean, that just seems like a little... I mean, like, I'm sure there were hopefully more people in that, but...
Given the version we have now, there's no one there because there are no servers at all.
It just seems premature. I mean, I found with all the Battlefield games, you kind of have to wait till it goes live on the public so you can actually get that real-world experience with it.
But you have to, because, I mean, within the course of a week, people are going to find all this stuff out. And I mean, and if you go in and say, hey, guess what? This is all great and well and good, and then... 1 week later, it takes one player to figure something out and say, hey, guess what? This is actually completely broken or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know...
I am interested in playing it. I will play, especially because, you know, we haven't been overly kind to this game so far.
No, you've got to... I mean, and that's been all based on pre-release versions.
It has been. So,
and the
yeah.
same thing is, I mean, I can't wait. I installed it. I got the game yesterday, installed it the moment I got home and was hoping to play and see who was online. And there are just no servers, period. So... But I mean, we'll all be playing it to give it a shot, and I want to get you guys in there.
I'm going to give it another shot now that it's live.
Is anyone going to play Desperate Housewives, the game? That's on my list of stuff that happened this week. that game came out for the PC.
Yeah, who wants to review it?
I think we should give it to Sean Elliott.
Oh, God. What kind of game is it? I mean, has it got like
I have no idea.
FMV clips of the ladies?
I'm guessing it's like Sim style.
I think so, yeah.
Sim stuff.
That would make sense.
That would make sense.
Good guess.
Yeah.
I'll see if my fiance wants
to report that as
the truth. My fiance still watches the show, so I'll see if she wants to check it out.
How are we doing on time here?
We're a little over an hour.
So holy mackerel.
We didn't get through half the stuff.
You want to read a quick reader?
We'll do a quick reader
to do that
letter, and then we need to go finish the first issue of Games for Windows Magazine.
Yeah, which is coming out well, I think.
Yeah, it's turning out well.
Yeah.
We haven't seen one page yet, which is a little scary since we're shipping in like three.
We've seen some pages.
A little nervous. We have.
We've seen plenty of pages. Ryan, we were just looking at the reviews opener section. I've got a nice preview for a game I'm not going to mention yet, but actually we could mention a nice... But anyway, some cool stuff.
There's going to be cool stuff, contests. We got some good stuff lined up for the first issue.
Oh, no, I'm very excited about the issue. So we're still Computer Gaming World, for those who care, for another...
for those who don't?
Week or two. Yeah, even if you don't care, that's the way it is.
Cool.
But then we're going to have to switch, and we got to switch this podcast name. I'm still liking Podcast for Windows. Oh, and Direct X-Men. That showed up.
Wow.
These are user submitted.
Yeah, if you guys got any more, the best one we're going to use.
Yeah. We might just be GFW Radio. I don't know.
Who knows? We'll see.
You know, after all the crap that we got for that acronym, I'm already... It's like any name.
GFW, of course it is.
Words and language, it's just such arbitrary.
It's like the Wii.
It's like the Wii. You just start using it.
Yeah,
but now the Wii is flipped. It's where like I despise it just because I'm sick of the bad jokes for it, reading them, especially from the enthusiast press, you know. Here we are, you know, like...
Right,
but don't get over that, too. Right.
And remember all the shit that the 360 got, too. Mm-hmm. No one even thinks about that anymore.
It's not like CGW or GFW or there's nothing inherently different about them.
Posts that really bothered me. It was like, you know, how could you go from something as cool as Computer Gaming World to games? It's like,
Computer Gaming World was cool.
Yeah. And the three letters CGW are not cooler than the three letters GFW.
Habit will make anything sound normal.
Yep. The one thing, I keep meaning to blog about this. The one thing that I do understand that people are saying is that, like, saying you're carrying around a magazine that, like, says Windows on it is somehow less cool than carrying around a magazine that says Computer Gaming on it.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, the Windows, you know, logo and the Windows brand is not as cool.
Right.
I guess I kind of get that. I don't know what to say about that, though.
Yeah. Are you going to be carrying it around? You just carry it around with you?
Don't you?
Yeah, don't you?
Sure. No.
Roll that mofo up. You look at the back ad, and then you judge it against the cover and see which is the less humiliating to be seen in public with.
That's so true.
You do that with all kinds of magazines.
I do the magazine flip all the time.
Yeah, just like, look at this ad. You're like, okay, we've got Kirby's, like, something touch on the back, and then what we got in the front? Some dude pointing a gun at you.
It's so
like,
true.
Then you open it up and do the weird flip where it's, like, rolled up from the inside.
I do that with every magazine. I'm actually having to do that with the book I'm reading now, too, because I've been reading a lot of novels, ones that I'm proud to say I read, like the Don Quixote translation.
Okay.
But now I'm reading some crappy sci-fi that has an utterly embarrassing cover on it.
And you know the assumptions people are making because you make them yourself. You're on the BART on a train.
Oh, yeah. No, I usually have the book turned over the other way because on the back it's just black with white writing. But I was down home in Los Angeles this weekend and I had the book on the coffee table and my own mother made fun of it. She's like, it's like, Jeff, why are you reading a romance novel? It's not romance, Mom. It's sci-fi. It's space opera.
It's cool.
You could put a laser gun each other, on Fabio's holster, space. And it's still a romance novel.
Yeah. I can't believe it's not funny.
Constantly walk around with those kind of books.
Yeah. So we're going to do a reader letter, and then we'll be out of here.
All right.
Ryan?
Here's a question from Snugs on our forum.
Oh, good old Snugs.
I want to know what is the worst game you have ever had to wade through.
Oh,
the all-time
worst.
The game that was so miserable it made you question your career choice.
We've had a version of this before.
I think we have had a version of this before.
We did. We had to play for review.
Right.
Well, I guess that would kind of be the case.
It's a good question.
It's a good one, but it's mad old.
Did we answer that once?
We did, because I remember specifically I had to take a detour into Consoleville and talk about Evil Dead, Fistful of Boomstick.
Yep.
And
we're sorry, Snugs.
So on and so forth.
Hi, Snugs.
Pay attention next time. Just kidding.
Yeah. And then it led to the fun side conversation. We were talking about
the Todd McFarlane game, right?
About that stuff, yeah.
And about
the general principle that a bad game is bad enough, but a difficult bad game is as bad as it gets. You
and
know?
A difficult bad game you have to play for review. Yeah,
right.
Even worse.
Right. And I will say that, you know, there's absolutely zero reason whatsoever to feel sorry for anybody who has jobs like us.
Right.
We have very easy lives and very easy jobs. Mm-hmm. However, reviewing bad games does really suck, you know, because they do take a long, like some games can take a long time. Yeah. That'll be like 40 hours or whatever in front of your PC, just like hating your existence.
Right. It's like that Clockwork Orange moment when someone, like, you know, someone strapped you into a chair and you're, you know, forcing your eyes open.
That's with the frequency and volume of PC games that come out, you know, both low. It's not where you don't have it so bad as, say, if you work for an online website where you cover multiple platforms, and there are definitely some people in that sector, freelancers, that end up reviewing many games in a single week. Mm-hmm. And that's when you can get to the point where you could probably legitimately, like, start weighing it against other career options that might not, on the face of it, be as sexy or attractive and still, you know, and it would still be worth the comparison. Us, definitely not. I mean, completely spoiled, I'd say, 100%.
Yeah.
I enjoy writing about bad games more.
Well, that's a cathartic part of it.
Like, yeah.
Done this.
I think my favorite review that I've ever read about a bad game was Jason Babbler's.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
Well, it was a great review. He basically, a former art director of the magazine like 6 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, it's about right.
He reviewed, I don't even remember the game. I just remember a very descriptive story about how he had to like kill and clean, was it badgers?
Yeah.
And basically said this game.
In real life.
In real life.
Yeah.
And how the game was worse than that.
Right. He never even mentioned the game at all. Just said, yeah. Actually, right now, if you want to see a really great review, go to Pitchfork, which is an online music site. Is it pitchforkmedia.com or pitchfork.com?
It was the review of the new Jet album.
The review of the new Jet album.
That, incidentally, is a tradition there. That's not the first review.
Is that right? Where they did that?
Yeah, it's a tradition.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
Basically, Monkey drinking his own pee.
Right,
that chimp, rather, not a monkey. It's an ape.
Right, the review is just a YouTube clip. Yeah, that, to me, that said it all.
I'm sure most people, maybe not, because people still send around the farting preacher on the internet like that's news. So I guess a lot of people probably.
And have you seen that really funny brownie recipe?
I'd be surprised.
What?
Sorry, nothing. No. That's like from internet 20 years ago.
Dancing Spider-Man. Dancing cook. Baby.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Grandma's going to send you that next week.
Thanks, Grammy. Look what I found on the internet. It's so funny.
Yeah, my dad does that to me.
LO1.
Okay, I think we're done. We had a long podcast. We will be back next week, I promise. I think.
Yeah.
Maybe if we feel like
we will.
We're going to really try. And thank you for listening to us, and we'll be back.